feeding. Authors are Brian Schwartz, University of Georgia, Eric Luke, University of Florida, Karen Harris-Schultz, USDA-ARS, Paul Raymer, and Wayne Hanna, University of Georgia. Presenting Brian Schwartz.
Good afternoon. This research is, in a way, a continuation of my PhD studies at Florida, where I studied under Billy Crow and Kevin Kenworthy along these similar lines. So when I got the job at Georgia, I thought it'd be a good opportunity to take a brief survey on how some of the older cultivars were doing compared to the brand new ones, and then some of our germplasm. And really, looking at this title, it should have been Georgia's germplasm. You know, sometimes you think of your paycheck when you write sort of things, but obviously the USDA has had a more than huge presence in Georgia, you know, 60 years worth of plant breeders and turf breeders there. So briefly, we came up with a method in my PhD research to quickly study the genotypic response to sting nematode feeding in the greenhouse using containers, and we use this in the current research at Georgia. More recently, Pang et al. Published on some of the responses of different Bermuda grasses to sting nematode feeding, and they included Tisport, and it exhibited mechanisms 1 and 2 types of tolerance, which they describe as, was the root length reduced when you compared roots of uninoculated to inoculated, and also mechanism 2, when you have sting nematode feeding, how do those roots rank just within that line? So we also looked at those mechanisms. And then going back a little farther and talking about the other germplasm I'm going to look at, Bethel et al. Published the first genetic map using the parents T89 and 574, and so I studied those also to see if there was any differential response. And more recently, Dr. Karen Harris-Schultz, as she spoke earlier, added markers and increased the resolutions and brought in some linkage groups. So our objectives were to determine if there's been genetic gains for sting nematode resistance or tolerance at the University of Georgia. So we're looking at Tisport, released in 1997 versus 2009, Tif Gran. Then also a Seashore Paspalum, CL1, released in 1999 by Dr. Duncan, versus UGA 31, released just this year by Dr. Paul Raymer. And then also to ascertain the differences in response to sting nematode feeding in our parents of our mapping population. So just briefly, I put this up here for y'all to read if you'd like, but Dr. Hanna made this cross in the early 1990s, and it has excelled in Tifton for quite a long time now. He's also tested it throughout the country in the NTEP and other locations. And some of the attributes of this grass are its very dark green color, fine leaf texture, and a variable response to all sorts of mowing heights. So it's done well in Tifton, and we typically have sting nematodes in our soils natively. And this is a picture I took about a month ago on the Dye Preserve in South Florida where they have sandy soils. And this is about an acre practice area, and it's all Tif Gran. And so you can see there's rough height over here. There's fairway height, collar height, greens height. He's mowing it at 100, you know, during the fall, winter, and spring, not during the summer. But the real reason it was planted there, you can see Mr. John Foy of the USGA there in this shady area. Tif Sport was here before, and it did not persist. This is another picture at the Floridian. They've renovated this course this year and sprigged the whole thing to Tif Grand. You know, the roughs and the fairways and tees. The only grass will be miniverde grass. So, again, you can see the sandy soil here when there is a nematode problem in the area. UGA 31, released this year by Dr. Raymer. Generally, it's one of the only paspalums that I can go to the plots and pick out. And I'm not a paspalum expert by any point, but it has very dark green leaf color. It's vigorous, and it has robust roots. And this is a picture of Paul. I don't know if he's in here, but he gets to pose with his grass at his new foundation field. And really, one of the reasons I wanted to include this, not only because I like working with Paul, but because on my USGA internship in Florida, Mr. Todd Lowe pointed this problem out to me. And he poses this as the triple threat. You're redoing a green, you order a grass. Number one, they give you the wrong grass. Number two, they have a paspalum contaminant. Number three, it's full of nematodes, they're sprigs. So this is a big problem, and you can see the paspalum there in the middle of this green. This is a picture some about a year later. If you look to the left here, that's the root profile of the Bermuda grass, short roots. The root profile of the paspalum, deeper roots. You know, this is a nematode-affected area. And here's the result after a stress. And this happens to be, you know, overseeding and drought stress, but you can see sometimes nematodes are the straw that breaks the back. The Bermuda grass has almost failed, and you have your paspalum here. So my materials and methods, quickly, we use containers. These are the 8-inch deep containers. When we were irrigating, it was by hand. We wanted to make sure not to overwater. And we fertilized kind of minimally because we're looking for genetic responses and not just response to massive amounts of fertilizer. We inoculated with 50 per 100 cc's of soil. This seemed to be a good level inoculum based on my previous research. We used styro blocks for insulation because although these are a very tough pest that's hard to get rid of in the real world, in the greenhouse you can almost look at them wrong and kill them. And we used 150-day duration because this seemed to make a nice equilibrium between the roots and the sting nematode populations and let us see those differences that we were looking for. It was a split plot design. Whole plots were the cultivar. Subplots were the inoculation treatments. As any of y'all know who've worked with nematodes or roots in the past, we had to include 10 replications or there and about. We used 10 because of the variability that's just inherent to this science. Proc GLM and SAS, Waller-Duncan's, and orthogonal contrast used to separate our differences. Just some pictures here of the destructive process. I want to show you just rather than talk about it, but you know, typical wet bench setup there in the lab. You know, you have your 400 mesh screen to catch the nematodes and just your regular kitchen strainer to catch the roots. A little root working station so you can take the roots out of the experimental unit. And there you pull out the experimental unit, put it into the kitchen strainer, blast it with soil or with water, and the soil and the nematodes fall through. You catch the roots there. Go ahead and pour that liquid off the top, and there your nematodes are now caught in the screen. You know, funnel them in there for later analysis. Take your roots, clip them off if necessary. Sugar float your nematodes so that you separate the trash from the nematodes. Makes for easy counting. As those of you who may have counted nematodes, it can be horrible if you don't do this process right. So now we have our nematodes there to count, and we have our roots to analyze. We used WinRhizo, and we looked at different classifications of root diameters, which this program lets us do pretty easily. For this study, I'm going to look at the final population density of our nematodes and total root length, fine root length, and coarse root length. So briefly to set up this table, this is dealing with the reproduction factors and the final sting nematode populations. You know, we inoculated with 50. On the left here, we have our genotypes. These are the final sting nematode populations. I've highlighted 29. This was the lowest in our transvalensis, but this was twice the level for risk of damage put out by the University of Florida Extension. So even though there are statistical differences here on final sting nematode populations, it's well above that level that you want to be at. So there is no, does not appear to be resistance in this set of germplasm, and the fact that the genotype was able to actually antagonize the sting nematode population. So good to know. It would be great if you found that right off the bat, but you wouldn't expect that. So this table has to do with the total root length as quantified by WinRhizo. Again, on the left, you have your cultivars. This column here is your uninoculated root length in the containers that had no nematodes. This column is your inoculated root length, obviously those that had sting nematode feeding. And here's just a description that helps you see what the reductions were. Follow our highlighting. You'll notice that UGA 31, although, let me back up real quick. If you have stars here on the left, that indicates a significant reduction from your uninoculated to your inoculated. And your Waller-Duncan was done to just look within that whole plot or split plot treatment. So UGA 31, whether uninoculated or inoculated, had the most roots. And that's good to know. That's mechanism number two. It had the most roots within the nematode presence there. You know, I've got Tiff Grand highlighted here. This was the only cultivar that we studied or genotype that was not significantly reduced from the uninoculated to inoculated. Although negative 17%, it was right on that border. So moving here, we're looking at Tisport versus Tiff Grand. Uninoculated root lengths were about the same, but promisingly, Tiff Grand had more root length in that inoculated container. And then you'll notice the big differences here in our parents of the mapping population, negative 17% down to 46. So that's promising on that front that maybe those two are very different from each other. Here's the fine root length. Now, many researchers will attribute fine roots to be able to uptake water and nutrients, especially in times of stress. So we like to look at the fine root lengths, which are 0.25 millimeters and less, according to this WinRhizo analysis. You'll notice here UGA 31 again is in that top statistical group. A lot of fine roots. TIFF Grand, not statistically reduced, although we're at 16%. T89, very similarly, which is interesting, because T89 is a pretty tough common, so TIFF Grand may be performing similarly to the common Bermuda grass. And then once again, in our uninoculated containers, similar root lengths, but when we put nematode pressure on, TIFF Grand maintained better root length. And finally, coarse root length. You'll notice these are a lot smaller numbers, but once again, UGA31 at the top. Kind of, if you remember that seashore paspalum picture on that green, it's not unexpected, but now we have a little documentation. T89, much higher, or much lower reduction than the T574. And again, TIFF Grand, the same as TIFF Sport, but it looks like Dr. Hanna made some gains, maintaining a little more coarse root length with the nematode pressure. So our conclusions, and these are preliminary in that we did this test in 2009, and we're repeating it right now. So I hate to say conclusions, so we'll see how this year's repeat turns out. But generally, the seashore paspalum supported more sting nematodes. But this is probably not due to increased susceptibility, but just that they had more roots to support those nematodes. And although 574 supported the few, it was above that threshold developed at the University of Florida, so there probably is not a resistance associated with that. And whether in the presence or absence of sting nematodes, 31 generally had the most robust root system of all the grasses evaluated. And there were no significant differences for total, fine, and coarse root length of the uninoculated controls between TIFF Grand and TIFF Sport, you know, when there was no pressure. But when you add that pressure, it looks like TIFF Grand was able to maintain all three of these categories as compared to TIFF Sport. So maybe selecting on that soil where we have between 25 and 100 nematodes per cc anyway really let Dr. Hanna make some gains. And then this is probably the most exciting for turf breeders and geneticists as we're moving forward, that when we're looking at the contrasting root reductions between 89 and 574, there were vast differences. And so if we can identify now and test the progeny, the 121 progeny of these parents, maybe we can identify the QTLs, which I could use maybe in the future to help me screen the germplasm, because as you might guess, this isn't the most fun or easy science to do or repeat. So having a QTL would be highly valuable to me and to others who might want to use this. So with that, I really appreciate your time, and I'll try to answer your questions if you have them. Dr. Q says we don't have resistance and we are selecting for tolerance, which is exactly what we're doing. And as a traditional breeder, that's what you're looking for, is a tolerance, or just it could be resistance, but not formally screening for this. That's what we've been doing. So.
I mean, that, to me, from a pathologist standpoint, so if that's the case, if that's what we've accomplished to date, then lots of roots is tolerance.
Lots of roots is tolerance, and like I mentioned briefly in the talk, that there's a threshold, and your grass will look healthy at a threshold, or if you have good other agronomic practices, and it's when a accumulation of bad things happen is when you really see sting nematode damage.
But now let me follow that. Billy Crow says, the more roots you got, the more feeding points you've got for the daggum nematodes. And so it almost seems counterintuitive.
I guess it could be, and I look at that picture of the TIFF Grand doing better in the real world and the UGA 31, and that's what, as a plant breeder, I'm looking for. Thank you.
So you tested about T574 acanthamensis, which is resistant or susceptible?
It looks like it's susceptible in the fact that the roots were reduced, but highly or much more susceptible than T89. So T89 is tolerant, or it looks like 574 doesn't stand a chance in the real world.
Do you have data for other transplanted
successes? We don't. This was the first time I've ever looked. Now, University of Florida may, but that I picked those two as a brief screen as when I got to Georgia.
89 with T89 was common?
T89 is a common 4X. Dr. Kopek, you don't have a question for me?
This whole thing, can you tell me what you said?
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.